as we say, Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. Vayishma haknani melech arad, yoshev hanegev. It sounds like simple psukim, but they're a little bit complicated because to understand who's what here is a bit complicated. So here they translate, the Canaanite, king of Arad. So it was one of the nations that the Jewish people, it's interesting, thought, or they posed as if they were from Canaan, and he was a king of a part that's called Arad. And what did they do? Where did they live? Yoshev HaNegev, they dwelled in the south. We're talking about in the south of the land of Israel. So what happened? They heard, what did they hear? Kibo Yisrael, that the Jewish people have come. Derech Ha'asarim, by the route of the spies. Simply that means, do you remember when the spies entered the land of Israel? They entered from the south. So he heard that, he obviously heard the Jewish people were about to enter the land of Israel, and because Edom hadn't allowed them in, they had to travel around. So now they were closer to the south. Perhaps we can first explain it that way. So they heard. So what did they do? Vayilochem b'Yisrael. And he warred. He literally went out and fought with the Jewish people. Vayish mimenu shevi. And he captured a captive from it. So interesting. Interesting language. One captive he took from the Jewish people. Let's see the psukim. Vayidar Yisrael neder, and the Jewish people made a vow to God, and they said, Vayomer, im nasayn titein es ha'am hazeh biyadi, if you will deliver this people into my hands, in other words, if you will allow us to be victorious over this nation, then what we will do is, we will, v'hacharamti es areihem, I will segregate their cities. Literally what that means is, Chayrem means I will designate their cities that we cannot use it for ourselves. We will set it aside for Hashem. Okay, that's what they're promising Hashem. So in other words, we don't want to be victorious because we want to get more physical things or material things or conquer land. No, we only need to be victorious because otherwise they'll destroy us, right? That's what we're saying to Hashem. So if you allow us to win and then we can get back this captive and we cannot be destroyed, we will set aside some of the part to Hashem. Not all of it to Hashem, actually. So what happens? The pasuk says, Vayishma Hashem b'kol Yisrael, and Hashem listened to the voice of the Jewish people, Vayiten es haknani, and he gave them the knani, Vayecharam eshem, and what did they do? They segregated them, Ve'es areihem, and their cities, Vayikrashem Hamakim Charama, and they called the name of the place Charma, like Chayrim. Okay, it's a very strange story because it doesn't say much. There's actually a lot deeper to the story, and I want to show you something, go back, something really fascinating here. That, as we say always, you know, Chumash is written so many years ago, and these stories happened thousands of years ago. They could have almost happened today. Okay, what's the story? So the story is like this. Let's again put in context who had just passed away, Aaron HaKohen. Aaron passed away, and we know that in the merit of Aaron, the Jewish people had those clouds of glory. Those clouds, not only did it make the journey so much better, you know, up to first class, and now they're in third class, but much more, it protected the Jewish people. The people, any nation who ever had any thought of doing anything to the Jewish people knew that they had no chance, because the clouds were surrounding the Jewish people. And if it says, if anybody would throw an arrow, the clouds would absorb the arrow, would actually bounce back and go back at the people. In other words, it was known that the Jewish people had a special protection. Now, when they heard that Aaron had passed away, fantastic. They think it's an unbelievable chance. Here we have a vulnerable nation. We can go and fight them. And we'll see in a minute who they are, and you'll understand in a minute who they really are. But one other fascinating thing, I don't have a copy for you, but in the last pasuk that we read, just if I could find it from last week, the pasukim that just come before, just want to find something, it said something interesting. It actually said, the pasuk says that the vayiru ha'am, that the nation saw that Aaron had passed away. So some of the commentaries say, don't read it that the nation saw, rather read it that the nation were now seen. What does that mean, the nation were now seen? Because now that there's no clouds, now they are visible to everybody and vulnerable to everybody. And that sets the tone for what happens here. But just one thing we should note is very interesting. How many captives were taken? What? It's such a strange story. It says, actually, according to some commentaries, this captive was not a Jewish, it was a young maidservant. She wasn't Jewish, which doesn't make it better. But what is interesting, it seems that this captive had originally been captured from the nation that was fighting them. So in a sense, it wasn't really a real captive. And they even got her back. So interesting. So no damage was done to the Jewish people by this war. Just important to remember. But who are these people that dare come now at the most vulnerable point again and fight the Jewish people? So let's see. Look into Rashi. Go back to the first page, page 248. Oh, sorry, I didn't share the screen here. Okay. All right. Okay, so let's see, in Rashi 1, okay, the Canaanite. Okay, first of all, they heard, what did they hear? We know they heard Shama Shemes Aaron, they heard that Aaron had died, and the clouds of glory departed. As we say, he says, it's quoted, actually, interestingly, in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah. Everything's Hashkocha Pratis. Okay, so what happens? Who was it? Who were these people? So we said Canaanim, right? Arad, Canaani. But look what Rashi tells us. It was Amalek, our favorite. Of course. What is Amalek? So he says, Amalek me oilam ritzuis tard mardusli Yisrael. They were always such a terrible, like, thorn for the Jewish people, as we say. A lash of chastisement over here, like, just used for Hashem to punish the Jewish people always. Why? Anytime. Ready, he says. Look, mizuman b'chol eis lo peronus, ready at all times for calamity. In other words, the Jewish, Aaron had just passed away. How were they ready, all ready to fight? Because they were always ready to fight. They were ready to pounce. They're like waiting when they can get the chance. As soon as they hear that the Jews are vulnerable, they're running. But why are they called Canaanim? Why aren't they called Amalek, which they are in other places? So let's see what happens. Something very interesting here. So it says, Yeshef HaNegev, they dwell in the south. And we say, Zeh Amalek, this is Amalek, Shenemar, Amalek, Amalek Yoshev Beretz HaNegev. It says that Amalek lived in the areas of the south. Now, what happened? Vishina es l'shaynai. The Amalek nation changed their language. They spoke a different language as they approached the Jewish people. Why? What was the idea? Because what they were hoping, and they spoke in which language? L'daber b'loshin Kanan, to speak in the Canaanite tongue. Kadeshayu Yisrael mispalalim, so that when the Jewish people will be davening to Hashem LaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, to save them, Lo seis Kananim biyadam, they would daven, give us these Canaanite people in our hands, right? Fantastic. Veheim einan Kananim, but they're not Kananim. So they say, if the Jewish people turn to God and say, deliver the Canaanites into our hands, and we are not Canaanites, well, we don't have to worry about their tefillahs because they're davening for the Canaanites they should be saved from. But we are not Canaanites. We're Amalek. In other words, every minute they just think of all kinds of crazy tactics, lies, anything, disguise themselves in order that the people shouldn't know who they are. So let's see what happens. But something very strange. So he says, Ra'u Yisrael levushayim. So Yisrael saw, the Jewish people saw their clothes, and it was the clothes of the Amaleks. They can't really hide themselves totally. But ulashaynam l'shayn Kanan. But the language they were speaking was the language of Canaan. So what did they do? The Jews are smarter. So they said like this, Nispalel Stam. We're going to daven without specifying which nation. We're not going to say to Hashem, save us from the Canaanites, even though they're talking like the Canaanites. We're not going to say, save us like the Amalek, even though they look like Amalek, because we don't know which one they are. So we'll just say, save us. And Hashem saved them. It sounds ridiculous, this whole story, but it's just a very profound thing. I just want to tell you. So he says, what did they say? Im nosein titein. See how it says in the Pasuk? Es ha'am hazeh, this nation. That's all they said. Just give us this nation, whatever they are. So you see something very, very incredible here. Such a powerful thing. We have enemies, whether they be external enemies, internal enemies, and sometimes we can't identify them. And that makes it harder. Because, you know, if you know what the enemy is or who the enemy is, at least you can know how to fight them. That goes in every way. That goes real, like practically, but that also goes emotionally and spiritually. Sometimes we feel down and we don't know why. Sometimes we're not in the mood and we just can't target what is it that's causing that difficulty. What is it that's causing that blockage? We have no idea. So sometimes what we have to do is just sit back and say, you know, Hashem, you're in control. You're in control, and we beg you, take care of the problem. Not only are you in control, but you know the problem. We might not, but you do. You know where the problem is coming from. You know how to identify it. So please help us. Help us figure out what to do. Help us figure out how to overcome this challenge. And this is what the Jewish people are doing here. They're really stepping back. And this is a big thing with Amalek, because Amalek, as we know, what's the big thing about Amalek? I mean, besides always being ready to pounce and destroy us, Amalek stands for, we know it's the same gematria as Safek, doubt. Because that's what Amalek does. Amalek makes you insecure. You're not sure. Where is it coming from? What am I meant to be doing? Am I doing the right thing? You know, that's a lot of times in life, that's the hardest challenge, is when you don't know if you're doing the right thing to help the situation. That's the worst thing, that when that comes your way. So here, what the Jewish people say is, Hashem, take away every doubt, any insecurity, any fogginess. You don't have to tell us how. Just do it. We leave it to you. And this is what the Jewish people did here. So they really daven. And Hashem helps, as we see. So I just want to show you. Derech ha'isarim, which way did they go? The route, firstly, either it was the route of the spies, Derech ha'negev, the road of the south. As we say, that's how the meraglim went. Shaholchu bo meraglim, by which the spies went. Because it says, vayalu ba'negev, they ascended in the south. At that point, the Jewish people had left Egypt, and they were more in the south of Israel, right? So therefore, they went from the south. That's where the spies entered. Here they were already not on that part of the land. It's interesting, but they had unfortunately had to go back down, remember, because of Edom not letting them in. So they had to backtrack a bit. Okay, we'll see how what that leads to next. But he says, or there's another explanation. Perhaps Derech Ha'isarim doesn't mean the way of the Meraglim, of the spies. Rather, Derech HaTayar HaGadol, by the way of the great scout. And we'll see, what is the great scout, Hanaisei Lefnein, that traveled before them? Do you remember we did just not long ago the famous beautiful psukim by Yehi bin Saya Ha'arain, that we say when the Arain comes out, they were magnificent psukim. So we know that when the Jewish people traveled through the desert, they had many things that helped them along. And amongst which was the Arain, was actually the ark. That there was a, it's a whole question which ark, but there was an ark that traveled a 3-day distance in front of them. That was also a protection for the Jewish people, and that paved the way for the Jewish people. It was like, I don't know how you say it, but it was like a scout, he says here, that went in front and made sure everything was good and clear and no enemies, and also the Jewish people knew which direction to follow. So that's what he's saying here. Perhaps this is Derech Ha'isarim, the way of the scout. What's the issue here? Because what did Amalek hear? Amalek said like this, they have this Arain going in front of them, that they have. But what they don't have is the clouds. So the Arain itself, very nice. That's not good enough to protect them. Now they're vulnerable. We're going to come and attack them. That's why it mentions this. So in other words, the Arain itself is not enough. That's what Amalek thought. They also need the clouds. Okay, Amalek is ready. They've come. Okay, then he says they took a captive. It's interesting. It says it was nothing but a single slave woman. And if you go on the next page, I want to just show you. Let me see. So this is on page 250. If you look into Rashi 4. Okay, so I just want to see one more thing here, and then we're going to go on to the next psukim. Because a very interesting thing that happened here. This is a very famous thing. And this leads us to the next story. So now, to put again, Aaron passed away. Resh Chodesh Av, he passed away. Now this wonderful nation of Amalek is coming to attack them. Okay, what happens now? It says like this. Since Aaron had died, and this war with Amalek had come upon them, so it says, Chazru la'achayreyem, they turned to the rear. In other words, they started to travel backwards, back, opposite direction, not closer to Israel all of a sudden. They start to move back. Why? Deeper into the desert. Because they're petrified. They're not doing the right thing. They're going a wrong way. But it's like somebody, you can imagine, when somebody's afraid, they run, you know, they run back. They're scared what's going to be next, what to face. And it actually says, how many journeys did they run? 7 journeys. So they had taken 7 journeys forward, 7 places that they had stopped. And now, like in 1 or 2 days, they ran back those 7 stops. That's what they did. They went backwards 7 stops. And Rashi brings us a proof for that, because if you look into the Psukim in Parashas Maaseh, where it describes the travels, it actually links 2 travels that shouldn't be together. We would think that they aren't together because they're 7 journeys away from each other. But they were together because unfortunately the Jewish people went 7 journeys and then they went back very quickly after Aaron passed away. So now, just to understand what's happening here, they're not in a good state of mind, okay? They're afraid. Even though Hashem had saved them now, he did save them, but Aaron is gone, right? They had just cried for 30 days and 30 nights. Actually, it says that they cried after the war with Amalek, because the war with Amalek happened immediately after Aaron passed away. And then they spent 30 days and 30 nights really, really devastated about the loss of Aaron, and especially feeling that loss so strongly because they see how vulnerable they are now. And now, what happens next? Okay, so let's go to the next page, and I'll show you something. Yes, sure.
Could be.
In a certain way, you're right. You're right, 100%. Hashem provides different ways. It's true. It's true. And we need it. As we say, we need it. Yes, as soon as we're vulnerable, we are attacked. That's it. Okay, I just want to show you something. It starts from Pasuk Dalid, Vayisu Mehor Hahar, right? They traveled from Hor Hahar, and that's where Aaron passed away. Derech Yamsuf, by way of the Yamsuf, Lispoiv, to go around Es Eretz Edom, and now we're on page 251, to go around the land of Edom, and now we come to very emotionally charged words, and I'll tell you because Rashi describes them. And how were the nation feeling? Vatikzar nefesh ha'am baderech, and the spirit of the people, this is the literal translation, grew short with the road. What does it mean, the spirit of the people grew short? What does a spirit growing short mean? I'll let Rashi tell us. He says it so beautifully. I want to show you something. If you look into Rashi, Vatikzar nefesh ha'am baderech, so Rashi says, first he describes what was the problem, b'tayrech haderech, with the hardship of the road, shehuk shalahem, which became difficult for them. What happened? Amru, they said, achshav hayinu kreivim likanes la'aretz, now we were so close to coming, entering the land, and what did we do? V'anu chayzrim l'achareinu, and we have just now traveled backwards in the opposite direction, and they start to have a flashback, right, of what happened 40 years before. They said, this is exactly the same thing. Kachazru aveseinu, in this manner did our ancestors turn around. V'nishtohu shloishim v'shmai nashana. And what happened with them? They didn't just go backwards a few journeys. They ended up getting stuck for 38 years, right? This wasn't a small detour. This was a very long detour. And they're petrified now. Is that what's going to happen to us now again? We think we're entering, but we're not entering. You know, we don't think about it, but when the Jewish people left Egypt, they were supposed to enter Eretz Yisrael very, very quickly. After they got the Torah at Har Sinai, that was supposed to be it. They weren't supposed to be wandering in this desert for 40 years. So you can imagine what that means. It's like we always say, it's like when you have an itinerary and you expect to be going somewhere within a certain amount of time, we go crazy from a delay of a few hours. Imagine a delay of 38 years. I mean, it's not done. It's crazy. And here they're petrified. What's going on? We've been sent backwards. So now Rashi will describe how they feel. So let's see what he says. So they start to say like this, Lefichach katra nafsham. That's why their spirit became short, Be'inoy haderech, with the affliction of the road. In other words, if you are traveling and you're getting to your destination and everything is working out, even if you're put in the worst seat on the plane, but if it's on time and it's getting there and you're so excited about the destination, it's okay, you put up with it. But as soon as things start to go wrong, we all know, as soon as a little delay, and then you say, little delay means lots of delays, and things start to go wrong, then you feel every discomfort. Everything gets highlighted, that's what happens. So now they're getting upset. So they say like this. And what happens? They say that their spirit becomes short. And Rashi explains, first he gives us French. You know somebody who speaks French? I don't know. Anyways, en court lore, I don't know. So in the down they translate, what is it? It has to do with the spirit, shortening of the spirit. I don't know. Anyway.
Depressed.
Very good. That's exactly right. Exactly. So Rona, you said it. Let's see. Rashi will give us more explanation even, but it's true. He says like this. He gives examples. Let me just see. For every place, let's see how we can read it in here in English. He says, It is stated clearly there with regard to what it grew short. Okay, so it gives examples of other psukim in other places. My spirit grew short with them. That's sometimes impatient also. But he says also, and his soul grew short with the travail of Israel. That's when Hashem was upset with the Jewish people. And he says the expression of shortening of spirit applies to anything that is difficult to a person. Like a person upon whom something disturbing falls, and his state of mind is not broad enough. It almost could be like from a psychology book that Rashi is writing over here in 1,000 years ago. It's quite fascinating. He says, the mind is not broad enough to accept that thing. And he does not have room within his heart where that pain may abide. It's quite beautiful, actually, how it's written. In other words, as you say, he's so depressed because it's so overwhelming. That's what it is. It's too big for him. He can't make peace with it. He can't accept it. There's nowhere inside that it can go. And that's what this means, the shortening of the spirit. Just for us to understand what the Jewish people were feeling, which leads us to what happens next. But I'll show you. He says like this. He says, and about a disturbing matter, an expression of largeness applies, for it is great. And it weighs down on the person who experiences it. And we all know, like you say, when somebody's depressed, always the imagery is of somebody who's sort of crouched and there's like this heavy weight on his shoulders or on his back and the person can't get out of bed. That's what people describe is a very big heaviness, we all say. Why? Because the thing is too big for us. And that's what Rashi is describing. That's how the Jewish people felt at this point, even though they were so close to entering the land of Israel. It's quite interesting. Again, the reason I'm stressing it is because lots of times when we read these stories, we read them quickly, and we think, how could they be like that? What's wrong with them? But just put ourselves in their shoes for 1 minute, just for 1 minute, and see how we react in our own situations, and we won't be so harsh and so quick to judge, and we have to try and understand. And also the idea is because life takes us on these same routes lots of times, and sometimes life is too big for us. Okay, so let's see what happens. Not such a good space to be in, but let's see. He says, and it weighs down, and he gives examples of other place, and their spirit too bloated me, and it was too large for me. And that's how Rashi explains the tiktzar. And it grows immense as a lion, Yusha would ensnare me. And he says, any expression of shortening of the spirit over a matter means that one cannot bear it, for one's state of mind cannot bear it. This is also a very big thing, because we know, I think we know, that sometimes in life we can experience something, we can experience actually the same thing twice. Sometimes we can, for some reason, cope, and sometimes we can't. Why? It's exactly the same thing, but the mind is different. That's what makes the difference. And when our mind is in a different space, it's sometimes in a space that it can take it, and it's sometimes in a space that it can't. And over here, they were, and I guess what we might say is just the fact that they've lost Aaron, their beloved Aaron, already put them in this terrible, constrained space where they felt everything was too much for them. So this is what happens. Let's see what happens now. Okay, immediately. Sure, sure.
How many of these people were, well, they weren't, because their generation was
bad. I know.
So it was a
different generation. Yeah, so the truth is some of them might have, yes, but they were younger than 20, don't forget. So they could have been 15, 16, all the women, exactly. But I don't know if the woman complained, but yeah, maybe not, I don't know. But yeah, the women would have known, and they would have heard about it all their life. You know, firsthand. So, you know, if you think about them growing up in the desert, all they would have heard from their fathers is what they experienced. So it becomes almost real. It's almost like what you experienced. So you're right. Perhaps they didn't exactly, but some of them did, and some would have just, yeah, heard. Now, there is an interesting opinion that some of these people were left over from that generation, even though we just mentioned before this story that they had all passed away. But there are some opinions that there was a few stragglers left, and perhaps they were really the ones who complained. But anyways, let's see what happens. They're going to complain again. And what do they say? Okay, so what do they say? Let's see. The pasuk, this is very hard. They say like this, Vayedaber ha'am ba'elekim u'bemayshe. This is a little different to usual. Because here, what are they complaining? They're complaining to Moshe and to God. About Moshe and God, so to speak. They're literally, they have tinnitus. And what do they say? Lama helisunu mimitzrayim. Why have you, and if you know diktuk, the word helisunu in English is just you. But it's plural you. It means they're actually addressing Moshe and God and saying, why did both of you take us out of Egypt? Lamos bamidbar, to die in the desert. Ki ein lechem, ve ein mayim. There's no bread and there's no water. What do you mean there's no bread? They still had the man. What do they say? V'nafshenu kotze b'lechem ha'kleikel. Our soul is at its limit with the insubstantial bread. Complaining again about the money. Okay, they're really not in a good space. You can hear. I just want to show you what happens from this complaint. This is one of the worst stories that is not. It's not so understood. I know, as I said, I did a shiur a few weeks ago, but on Shabbos, so I'm happy in a way to do it now because it's just to get it even more clear. What happened? Something quite incredible. Vayishlach Hashem ba'om. So Hashem sends to the nation es hanechoshim asrafim. What did he send them? Very interesting. He sent them snakes, but what type of snakes? Burning snakes. In other words, snakes, you might call them fiery serpents, but they were poisonous. And what happened? Vayinoshchu es ha'am, and they bit the people. Vayomos am rav, and a lot of people died. They were being bitten by snakes. It's a horrible thing to think. But what happens? Just want to see the pasuk. What happens? And then we'll understand. So this is a very strange story. Now, after they're complaining, but now they're getting bitten by snakes. So who do they run to? Of course, Moshe again. And what do they say? And they say, Chatanu. We sinned. We're sorry, right? We sinned. Ki dibarnu b'Hashem vavach, that we've spoken against Hashem and against you. Hispalel el Hashem, davin to Hashem, vayoser me'aleinu es hanochosh, that he should remove the snake from us, vayispalel Moshe ba'ad ha'om. And Moshe davins for the nation. I have to tell you one thing before we go further. This is actually a very important lesson, just because I don't want to miss this lesson today. It says like this, that Moshe Rabbeinu saw the nation suffering, right? I mean, the snakes were biting them, they were dying. But what happens? The people come to whom? To Moshe to daven for them, right? Of course. Intercede for them. Now, do you think they did tshuva? A proper tshuva? There's no proof that they did any kind of tshuva. The only reason that they're upset is because they're getting bitten by the snakes. They're desperate, right? So how does Moshe react when, and who did they complain against? Not only Hashem, but against Moshe, right? And what does it say? Moshe immediately davened on their behalf. The Mefarshim all tells, and Rashi also tells us, actually this was put in here to teach us such a profound lesson. The reason that Hashem wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to daven, and that the people should ask Moshe to daven, and that he should daven immediately, is a lesson for all of us. And this is such a lesson for now, I say, in the month of Elul. It says like this, they hurt Moshe, they insulted him, they left him, it's like the lowest of the low what they did. And yet, the minute they come to ask him to do them a favor and intercede on their behalf, what does Moshe do? He does, because he forgives them immediately. And this is what we're meant to learn from part of the story. Somebody does something to you, no matter how bad it is, they ask you forgiveness, even if they're not sincere, you forgive them. If not only if they ask you forgiveness, even if they don't ask you forgiveness, if they ask you for a favor, you do it for them. Because this is what Moshe Rabbeinu did. This is a very important part of the story. This is a very important part of the lesson. Okay, but what happens? So Moshe Rabbeinu davens. And then let's see what happens. So it says like this is a very strange thing, as we said. So Moshe Rabbeinu davens. And Hashem says, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, Asei licha, make for yourself. What should you make? Saraf, a burning one. Whatever that means. Like a burning snake, we would think, but in a minute we'll see. V'sim oisai al nes, and put it on a flag, on a pole. V'hoya kol hanoshuch, and anybody who was bitten, v'ra oisai, will be able to look at this sorof that you've made, and what will happen to them? And they will live. V'chay. A bit of an interesting story. V'yos maisha, so maisha does, he makes it, right? Nachash nachoshes. Interesting, Hashem told him to make a sorof. A saraf, we understand, it's some kind of fiery serpent. But what does Moshe Rabbeinu make? He makes a nechash nechoshes, a snake out of copper. He wasn't instructed to do that, but that's what he does. You see, the word copper is similar to snake. Figure it out. Same word, best material to use. He makes this copper snake. That you see, meyu al hanes, and he puts it on this pole. V'hoya im noshach hanochash, and if the snake would bite, as ish, a man, v'hibit El Nachash, he would look very hard at the Nachash, Hanachashas, this copper Nachash, Vachai, and he would live. Strangest story in the world. This is a very strange story in the Chumash. For many reasons, many people want to understand how this works, because this is a bit of a, it's a borderline, I don't know what you want to, we use a borderline like thing that we're not allowed to do, like witchcraft and idol worship and like very strange. But Hashem commanded him, so we understand it's different. And whatever happened with this copper snake afterwards, interesting. The whole story that it remained with the Jewish people for many generations until it was actually destroyed by Chizkiyahu because the Jewish people were misusing it. Interesting thing, fascinating thing. Okay, we'll get to that later, but I want to understand what is happening here. Okay, so first, we have to understand, this is a lot to understand, and we're going to take a little bit today, and next week we're going to see more in depth. Quite a powerful thing. I just want to see the Rashi first. Let's see. Okay, I want to just see Rashi 6. So this is on page 252. Let me show you something. On page 252, it says, Es anechoshim hasrafim. The snakes... Oh, sorry. I just want to say one thing about the mun. What were they complaining about? So they were complaining about the mun, that it is absorbed inside the parts of the body. That's why they called it insubstantial, because we know that the when they ate the mun, they didn't actually have to go to the bathroom. So they said it's something... How can a person live with just eating and not letting out? That's not the way a human being lives. But the mun wasn't real food. It was heavenly food. So there was no waste. It was amazing. It was miraculous. But the Mefarshim explained, what were they complaining? They said, it's all very nice and good to give us this, how do you say, outworldly food that has no waste, which means it's not heavy, right? Which is actually amazing. We would all want that. Like, imagine you can like go through the day, because after you eat, you feel tired, and never feel tired, because the digestive system doesn't have to work extra hard to digest the food. It just gives you life. It sustains you. It's amazing. It's a miracle. But they said, that's fine. But we are traveling. And when we're traveling, we need extra energy. And it's not giving us the extra energy. Okay. They have, obviously, as we said, they're looking for a complaint. That's the point. So they complain to Moshe. And what happens in the next thing? It says like this. So when Hashem says that he should take, we call the Nechashim Hasrafim, Hashem tells him, what happens? Hashem sends these snakes. It seems that he's sending these burning snakes. What does that mean? Because they burn a person, ba'aras shineim, with the venom of their fangs. That's why they're called burning. So they're poisonous snakes. In a minute, we'll have to understand where these snakes come from all of a sudden. And then it says they bit the people. And it says, so Rashi tells us, why did Hashem specifically send snakes? They complained. And what did they do here? We know, we can put it in simple words. They spoke Lashon Hara about the mon. That's what they did. Not only about the mon, but about Moshe and Hashem too. Why'd you take us out of Egypt? To die in the desert. So what happens to them? So Rashi says, let the snake who was stricken over bringing forth malicious talk. We know the snake was the one that caused the initial sin with Chava by talking negatively, as we know. And that's what caused all the suffering we have up until today. So we say, let that snake come and take his doom. In other words, be the one to punish the people who are talking Lashon Hara. So it makes sense. That's one reason why Hashem uses snakes to punish them here. But there's another fascinating thing that it says. And this is such a magnificent idea also. It says, let the snake to whom shakol haminim nit'amim loitam echad, that all varieties of food taste alike. Remember, that was the curse of the snake. Right, that he eats sand, he does nothing taste like anything for the snake. So let him, who his whole life, all he does is eats the sand and never tastes, never has pleasure in his food, let him come and punish the ingrates, as they call them, kfuye toiva, those people who have no gratitude, shadavar echad mishtana lehem, for whom one single thing, one part of man, can transform itself to have many flavors. And instead of saying thank you to Hashem for this mun, they find something wrong with the mun and they complain about it. So the one who doesn't have any taste and never gets pleasure from his food, he is the one that should come and bite the Jewish people. In other words, shake them up a little bit and tell them, look, you've been giving the biggest delicacy that could possibly exist in the whole world. How could you be filled with such ingratitude? Now, before we go further, I just want to share an interesting idea, just to put in perspective what's happening here. So we said Aaron had passed away. The clouds of glory have disappeared. They're almost about to enter the land of Israel, but they are still in the desert. What is the desert full of? And we were told this initially. What kind of desert were they going in? It says Midbar, Hagadol, a big desert, a vast desert. And what was found in that desert? Nechashim v'akravim. Snakes and scorpions are found in that desert, right? They were there. You think these snakes came all of a sudden? These snakes were there for 40 years. But for 40 years, they didn't bite the Jewish people. Why? Why did they all of a sudden bite them now? Now the clouds of glory are gone. Now they're vulnerable. But so what? Shouldn't Hashem protect them? Yeah, he should. If the Jewish people look at their life as being protected by Hashem, as leading a miraculous life, well, then Hashem will provide miracles. In other words, if they accept the fact that they are going to be subsisting on this mun, which is a miraculous food, it's true, it comes from heaven. It might not make you feel so full, right? It might not. It might be different to normal food, but still, it's miraculous food. But if you complain about the miraculous food, Hashem says, no problem. You want to live a natural life? No worries. I'll just remove all of the supernatural protection. Now, if you remove the supernatural protection and you're traveling in the desert, what happens? Well, the snakes and scorpions will act as snakes and scorpions do. They'll come and bite you because that's what they do. So you see, it's not even, in a sense, it's almost not, if you want to say, a punishment. It's a direct consequence of their attitude, of what they were doing now. And there's another interesting question. Why all of a sudden they're complaining again about the mun? Sounds strange. So one of them, I saw a beautiful idea that, remember, they had just been traveling very close to land, right, to Edom. So they had money. They were very, very wealthy. Remember, they took all the spoils of Egypt with them. As soon as they came close to land, you could imagine, as we all know, anytime you have an opportunity, they bought food from the people. Now they had tasted real food again. And when they tasted real food, they said, we want real food. We don't want the mun anymore. And interesting, the Medrash gives us a fascinating mashal for it. He says, the mun is like the food that a baby eats when the baby nurses from their mother. And nursing from your mother, I mean, it's miraculous. It is. I mean, what happens to a baby, the development of a baby that can be just from the milk of the mother in those 6 months is more than what we do our whole life sometimes, right? And it's just from that one pure food that Hashem, again, miraculously makes the mother able to give the baby. What happens after the baby starts to eat solids? So most of the time, the baby will nurse from the mother because it likes the closeness, but that's not enough for them anymore. They want the real food. And that's the same thing that happened to the Jewish people. So now they want real food. But really, what does that mean? It means they say, they look how other people live. Look, these people are living in a civilized place, whatever you call them, civilized. We want to live lives like that. We don't want to be beholden and waiting every morning for the mun that only lasts for one day. Our cupboards are always empty. Our suitcases don't have extra provisions of food. We don't like to travel like that. No Jew travels without the tuna sandwiches. Impossible. You can't be, right? The Jewish people don't know how to do that. So they get worried. They get upset. And that's when they complain. And then Hashem says, okay, no problem. I'll remove the normal, the supernatural. Just live normal lives. A Jew cannot live a normal life if they want to. It doesn't work. It's not possible. And that's very much the message here of the Pesukim. I just want to show you if we could do, see one more Rashi. Oh, now, what did he have to do? So he had to make the special Nechash Nechashes. Okay, so Rashi says, as I said to you before, that Moshe Rabbeinu davens, and as we said, that it teaches us that a person should never, ever, ever hold back from somebody who asks for forgiveness, even for a moment. He should not be too cruel to forgive. And then, sorry, just let me see if I can scroll it. Okay, and then we say, Kol Hanoshuch. Okay. Oh, Al Nes. So he says, what is Nes? Because Nes sounds like miracle. But Nes is really a pole. Why is a pole the same word as a miracle? Because what's a miracle? A miracle is when something stands out. You notice it, right? It's something that's not the usual. And that's what a pole does. A pole stands out. A pole is noticeable. So he had to put this copper, well, he made it out of copper, but he had to put this snake somewhere high up so that all the people could see it, because that's what's going to provide them with their cure. Okay, so then Rashi says, Kol Anoshuch, everybody who has been bitten. Afilu, he says, very interesting thing here. Afilu kelev oichamar noishchai. In this plague, even if a dog or a donkey would bite him, he would suffer harm. Ooh, and then gradually deteriorate to the point of death. But the difference was the bite of the snake would cause death quickly. That is why it says here, anyone who has been bitten will look at it. First it says anyone who has been bitten will look at it, right? That means just merely looking would cure. But afterwards, in the next pasuk, after Moshe makes it, it says they would stare at it. So for the snake bite, they had to stare long and hard. for the other bites of the donkey or the dog, one quick look and they would be cured. But the snake bites, they had to look really hard, and only then would they be provided with some type of a cure. They would not die from it. He says, that's what he says, he would stare. So it was that if the snake bit a man, he would stare. And he says, for one bitten by the snake did not become cured quickly unless he stared at the copper snake. And we have to understand what that means with intent. And now I just have to read this part of the Rashi. And I feel so bad because I wanted to do this such a fascinating Ramban. If you're not able to come next week, just even to listen to that part, it is so, it's so interesting, but I don't have time. We just have to do this Rashi, and the Ramban explains this so interestingly. Okay, but I want to show you what Rashi says here, and this is a very important thing, not to leave it without it. So this whole thing sounds so hocus pocus and so strange. So Rashi brings a quote from the Gemara that tells us about this, the big question that everybody has, the same question. It says like this: could a snake, v'chi nachash, the copper snake made by Moshe, maimis, cause death, oy mechaya, or give life? Is that possible? Ella, bizman shehayu Yisrael mistaklin klal b'mayla, at the time that the Jewish people would look upward, umishabdim es libam, and subject their heart, la'aviyem shabashamayim, to their Father in heaven, hayu misrapim, they would be cured. V'im lav, but if not, hayu nimaykim, they would waste away. So it has nothing to do with the snake. It has to do with looking upward. That's what the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says. And it actually has the same thing. We have that story with Amalek, actually. Do you remember the initial war of Amalek? This one was the third time Amalek came to attack, the one just now. But the original one, what happened there? Moshe Rabbeinu had to hold his hands up. Do you remember? And Aaron had to hold his hands on both, one on each side, otherwise, because he was getting tired. And the question is Moshe Rabbeinu's hands what make the war successful? No, because Moshe Rabbeinu's hands are directing the Jewish people to look up to heaven. But this is not good enough. If Hashem wants them to look up to heaven, why is he making a snake just put an arrow pointing up? This is so strange. A copper snake, a very strange thing. And that's what we have to understand. What's really happening here? Why this and why in this way? And what's the sin and what's going on? That's what we're leaving with much more questions than we have any answers, in suspense, but it's a fascinating story. But just again, to keep in mind, as we say over here, the most important thing is we look up. We have to remember who's above us and that we don't live natural lives. Whether we like it or not, we don't have that choice. We don't have that luxury. We live miraculous lives. And when we remember it, we are protected. Then we live miraculous lives. But when we don't remember it, then it becomes trouble. Trouble hits. Okay, we're going to leave it here. And in Mirtz Hashem, next week we will tell you, we'll see beautiful ideas from the Ramban, the Aruch Chaim. Yes, Chana.